good afternoon or evening, depending on when you're watching this. James Enstall, host of Geek to Me Radio. This is a special bonus episode. We're kind of going to dissect the Suicide Squad. And I know you've heard me mention his name many times because he's always behind the scenes making the show look good. But we're breaking this one down with my executive producer, Joey V. Joey, thanks for doing this with me.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was my idea, so thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's very kind of you to have me. I appreciate it.
Yes.
We're talking about Suicide Squad because you've seen both of them, and you reminded me that my very first episode over five years ago, we celebrated our five-year anniversary of Geek to Me Radio. That was the first thing I did was break down. That was my first movie review on air, was breaking down the Suicide Squad, the original film. Just called Suicide Squad. Actually, as I say, The Suicide Squad, that's the James Gunn movie that's out now. Suicide Squad was the first one. David Ayers is the director. A couple of the same cast members. But looking back at that one, have you gone back and rewatched that movie since it came out?
I want to be honest right now. I have not seen that one. I've avoided almost all of the DC movies just because of the word of mouth. I'm addicted to watching reviews for movies, but I don't always go and see them just because, you know, they're out. I usually wait for the tomato meter and stuff like that. And I've avoided a lot of DC movies. And I've actually never seen Ben Affleck as Batman. I've never sat down to watch a Justice League. I think he was mentioned a little bit in Wonder Woman. Like, he wrote a letter to her, and that was it. He wasn't even in that one. So I've not even seen Ben Affleck as Batman. And it's just because they're not as good as the Marvel movies. So whenever you do get a good DC movie, I make sure I see it. I've seen Wonder Woman. I've seen The Suicide Squad. And I don't know if there's anything else that
I... You didn't see Shazam? I liked Shazam.
I did see Shazam. Very violent. It was a weird tone. It seemed like a kid's movie, but it was also pretty violent. And that had good word of mouth, but I was kind of let down. So that was another strike against DC for me.
So Suicide Squad, did you ever read the comics?
I have not read the comics either. I am looking to you to teach me. That's why I wanted to talk to you, because I know that you are just a comic aficionado. You know the numbers. You know exactly what the covers look like. You know, I asked you what your first, you know, entry into the Suicide Squad was, and you're like, Justice League 13. You didn't say that, but you were pushing your glasses up that you don't wear when you
said
it.
Actually, yes. Yeah, that was my very first.
This isn't a dig. I love this about you, that you're just an expert of knowledge about
this
stuff.
I always, that's one of the things, as a shy, nerdy kid, comic books were the thing that I did in grade school and everything like that, and all the cartoons and stuff like that. So it's kind of nice that I get to show off all of this useless knowledge now.
We're
that I'm
going to get you on Antiques Roadshow, 80s edition or something like that.
That would be great. Yeah. I'd love it. That'd be fantastic. No, but the Suicide Squad, because you asked me that off air and we were talking, and I was reading Justice League. I love the Justice League International. It was Justice League, then it was Justice League International, then it was Justice League America. But it's that same run. There was a 125-issue run started by Mark DeMatteis and Keith Giffen. And we've had both of them on the show. If you go back to Geek to Me Radio, you'll find those episodes. But we talked with J.M. DeMatteis. See, he corrected me because I originally said J.M. DeMatteis. He's like, people say DeMatteis, but yeah, DeMatteis is fine. But so I ended up going both ways. But anyway, we've had him on the show. He's very nice. And I love that run of Justice League. It was humor. It was superhero. It was kind of unlike anything else that was out there. And I was reading that very religiously. And then they had the crossover issue. It was issue number 13 of Justice League International, where, and you've got up on the screen right there, where it shows the Suicide Squad facing off against the Justice League. Well, it was a two-parter, so you had to get the Suicide Squad to see what happened, kind of the continuation of that. And very cleverly, it was the reverse cover. You show the faces of the Justice League coming at the Suicide Squad. But that was my first introduction. I kind of thought it was kind of cool what they did. So I'd pick up an issue here and there. I never collected it regularly. But I liked the idea. And after a while, this was probably back in 2004-ish, 2005, I had a different job, and I was actually getting paid well, so I'm like, I'm going to go back and buy some of these comic books. And this was not 2021, where comic books are now stupid expensive to buy. I got, the Mike Grell run of Green Arrow, 0 through 137, boom, $50, read the whole thing, cover to cover, you know, first issue to last. And Suicide Squad, I saw a deal on that on eBay, 66 issues, it was like $16. Yeah, so I'll buy them all, and I read them, and I loved it. It caused me to have problems with that first Suicide Squad movie, because this was a shadow, you know, these villains were in prison. We're going to send you on missions. You get time commuted off your sentence. If you go off mission, if you try to escape, we hit a bomb that's implanted in your neck and it blows your head off. Amanda Waller headed it all up. So those aspects are correct, but they were more behind the scenes toppling governments, doing politically motivated things. So it was very much kind of an intrigue. And John Ostrander wrote, if I'm not mistaken, the entire run, with maybe an issue off here and there because he was also doing Firestorm at the time. But it was very cool. It was grounded in reality. They butted heads with the Justice League. Batman, they butted heads with him a couple times. And Amanda Waller, I love that character. She was this devious, brilliant, just woman who had a, you know, all this power at her fingertips and wasn't afraid to use it. And we kind of saw that too in the Justice League animated series. It was out in the early 2000s, and CCH Pounder voiced Amanda Waller. And that's the voice I hear in my head when I read a Suicide Squad comic to this day. So it was a very long-winded answer to tell you that was my introduction to Suicide Squad.
I love that you were so kind back then too, because I listened to your very first episode to get ready for this. And you were saying, you know, Joker is useless and it's not my comic books. 6 out of 10. I was like, James, you're a nice guy. And I like that about you. It's because you were paid by DC. You're on the DC payroll.
That is true. I'm Michelle. Yes. No, I've always loved movies too. Again, going back to the shy, nerdy, introverted kid, that was my thing. I'd sit in a dark movie theater. You know, my dad would take me to see Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and I'd get the big popcorn. I loved movies, always have. And going to the movie theater and seeing these movies was always a thrill. So it's hard for me to hate on something that just, this is, you know, it's comic books and it's movies and these people are up there making art or doing their thing. And like we just got done, for those of you who are watching this, depending on when you're seeing it, we just had Rick Burchett, four-time Eisner Award winning artist Rick Burchett, talking about Suicide Squad.
You always say the Eisner thing. What time? How many times has he been on Geek to Me Radio? Like 10-time Geek to Me award-winning co-host.
We should have an award. I think Susan Eisenberg would win the award though, because she's been the most prevalent on the show. But he was talking about this too, and he hasn't seen either of the movies, but it's that level of the, you know, we were talking about Will Smith. He said, "Oh, it's gonna be a Will Smith movie." And again, this is nothing against Will Smith, but when you get Will Smith in a movie, you get Will Smith in a movie. It's not like you're getting Jeffrey Rush where what's his character to me, but Julia Roberts, Ryan Reynolds, Will Smith, they always play Julia Roberts, Ryan Reynolds, and Will Smith. Nothing against them because it's great. They do a great job, and when you see a movie, you know what you're getting. That's not a knock. That's not a dig, but Will Smith as Deadshot was Will Smith. So that was one thing I was like, okay, it's fine. But that was one of my things that I kind of wish they'd gotten someone a little more character. Because I don't, when I read Floyd Lawton, like the Deadshot series, again, written by Ostrander, it's a 4-issue miniseries. When I read him in Suicide Squad, I don't get Will Smith vibes. And it doesn't matter white or black, that doesn't matter at all, the race of the character or anything like that. But it's just, that didn't seem like the character was there. So it was Will Smith as Deadshot, which is fine. I love Will Smith. So yeah, again, that's kind of one of my nitpicky things with it.
You also said the 3D was pointless. You were disgusted by it, them trying to poke you in the eye.
I feel like you're saying a lot meaner than I remember being. I remember not caring for the movie, but my big thing was, again, when I talked about the comic books, it was politically driven. They were toppling governments. The biggest bad they went up against was, I think, Count Vertigo. For those of you DC Comics readers, you know he's not, you know, top-tier villain material. But it was always very interesting how they did stuff. But the fact that the Suicide Squad is taking on the Enchantress, this mythical, magical level threat, where was Superman? Where was Flash? Where was Wonder Woman showing up to say, oh, what's going on here in the middle of the city when this demon tower is rising up? So that kind of bugged me a little bit. And also the fact that the Suicide Squad was able to take down. And I had that same problem with James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, because Starro the Conqueror is a Justice League level, all hands on deck type villain. And spoiler alert, if you're listening to this right now and you have not yet seen the movie, first of all, shame on you, because it was a much better movie than the first one. But Harlequin and Ratcatcher taking down Starro to me is a little, it strains credulity. I'll put it like that.
I think that it's perfect to move on to the second movie because, I mean, we're already talking about it. And my big problem with superhero movies in general, I've gotten a little exhausted by it, is that it usually ends with a fight in the sky and you don't know whose punch is gonna be worth more at any given moment. And, you know, that constantly happened. You know, even Wonder Woman, just a big fight on the ground and in the sky, end of WandaVision, you know, just a great series all throughout. And then it's two Visions fighting in the sky. Black Widow, you know, everyone's just fighting up in the clouds. And, you know, it all kind of blends into me. And so when we get to the Suicide Squad, it just felt different. You know, we can start at the beginning of the movie, but that ending, it just felt beautiful. It made me cry, actually, because it was so well put together. So I don't know how did you see the Suicide Squad?
In the theater. Yeah.
And you were at a press screening?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's with some snooty press people.
Well,
that,
you know. But it's, again, this is, again, just my thing. I don't like seeing movies for the first time at home. And we've said this before. If you've listened to the show, I apologize because you're hearing this again. But the best sound system, the biggest screen TV doesn't match that theater experience when you're seeing it. Even at the press screening, there are a lot of us there who were like, wow, this, you know, it's just that you, there's that energy because you're seeing it with a bunch of strangers. And it's just kind of different from anything you see at home. So that's why I think all movies should be seen in the movie theaters.
I agree. But, this was get you back into the theater type of movie. Like I said on another episode of Geek to Me Radio, it was like A Quiet Place 2. I mean, that opening just blew me away, and I knew I was back in the movies and beautiful surround sound. And then Suicide Squad 2021, I was just like, this is what movies are meant to be. Just and seen with friends and family that are just cheering and laughing, and like this movie was incredibly funny and incredibly violent. So you got both of the
it's a James Gunn movie.
And the and just the laughs. I mean, This was a great one for me.
So you having not seen the first movie and having not read the comic books or been familiar with them, it sounds like, first of all, I should address it. It sounds like you're having a little bit of superhero fatigue, which is something that people bring up all the time. It's like, I'm over these, all the Marvel and the DCs, who cares? But we may have to circle back to that. But the first thing is, what was your impression? Like, was anything seem out of place, seem a little too much, having not seen the first one and having not been familiar with the comic books and then seeing The Suicide Squad?
You know, I feel like a lot of this Marvel and DC and superhero stuff, there's so much homework that needs to be done. You got to watch the movies and then the TV shows, and there's 30 different Marvel movies that you have to catch up on to see where the plot and the Easter eggs and what they even mean. I really feel like this, The Suicide Squad 2021, is a great one-off story. You don't need to know anything about the comics. You don't need to know about the 2016 version. You can just sit right in and immediately just be sucked in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the fun, is that I didn't know anything about even the trailers. I hadn't watched any trailers either. So I didn't know who lives, who dies. And that is a huge plot point of the way it takes a left turn just immediately when the movie is like 10 minutes in. You're like, oh, we aren't safe with anybody. We don't know who's going to make it.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the things of the book, too. In the very first issue, one of the characters dies, like right off the bat in their first mission. And that's kind of the cool thing on the cover, because it shows all the faces of, you know, Deadshot and Enchantress and Captain Boomerang. It says one of these characters will not survive this issue.
And that was
something new. It's like kind of, oh, what's this about? So that's kind of a cool thing, too. I should mention, too, we talked to John Ostrander, and we had an interview with him at Superman Celebration in 2017. And this is just a brief clip from the interview. It's interview episode 42, if you're watching this right now. GeekToMeRadio.com episode 42 has our full interview with John Ostrander. But I did ask him about the first Suicide Squad. I keep wanting to say The Suicide Squad. That's not correct. The Suicide Squad is the new movie. Suicide Squad was the first movie. But I asked him a little bit about that movie and his input on it. So let me play that clip real quick.
I got to say, I'm a huge comic book nerd. That's hence the show. But your run on Suicide Squad, that's one of my favorite hands-down books that I think everyone should read. And the characters, the way you wrote them and everything like that. When the movie came out, did Warner Brothers DC consult with you at all? Did they ask any input as far as what they were doing with the film?
No, but that's often the case. You know, they have their own vision and their own story and their own version. They obviously had read the comic and someone was basing a lot of stuff on it. So I've got no gripe.
And it appeared in, like I said, the animated form as well. We saw them on Arrow. Do you keep up with all the DC Universe TV and animated series? Do you watch it at all, or is it kind of like in the background? You're not.
I watch as many of them as I can pick up on. I don't always pick up on all of them, but I have tried to keep up on it.
And I think it was great too, because not only was he consulted on the second one, because James Gunn made a big thing. It's like, I love the Ostrander run. I consulted John Ostrander. John Ostrander shows up in the second movie. He's the guy putting the bomb in the back of Michael Rooker's neck. And even has a line. So, and we just, again, learned from Rick Burchett that he was an actor. He did some stuff with Second City and things like that. So that's really gratifying to see as someone who loved the comic book and who enjoyed the series, that James Gunn went that extra step to not only consult the man who created these characters, not created the characters, but this concept, and then put him in the movie as well. So I love that.
Do you remember the controversy that happened with James Gunn and how he even got to be involved with the Suicide Squad?
Yeah, because he was working, obviously, on Guardians of the Galaxy and had those. And then someone – and again, this is the problem with the internet. People go back and they dig something up that you said or you did 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they're, oh, my gosh. And as a result, Disney's like, you were fired. And huge uproar. And it was very nice to see, too, that – Dave Bautista and Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana all kind of rallied behind him and said, James Gunn is a very good person. Taking something out of context that he said, trying to be edgy, trying to be a comedian 10 years ago. And again, I feel like this could go down a whole nother rabbit hole, and I don't want to do it, but I feel like my two cents, as a society, as a culture, as a people, we need to have more grace. We need to have more forgiveness about things. And if someone comes up and says, yeah, I don't care, then no, they shouldn't be forgiven. But if someone's like, yeah, it was 10 years ago, I'm sorry I said it, you know, I was being edgy, they seem like they're sincere, they're apologizing, we should be a little more forgiving about stuff, because everyone did dumb stuff in their youth. A lot of people like me who just did it and said it off the internet. So I think some of the stuff I said was mostly harmless. But
yeah, there's a little bit of trivia. I'm very closely involved with this story with James Gunn.
Okay.
Don't ask him about it because he won't know, but I used to run the boards for a talk show at a different radio station, and the host, he welcomed conspiracy theorist type people onto the show. He gave them a platform, which I didn't really agree with, and some of the people that he had on were the ones that did that kind of get James Gunn fired thing. They're the ones that dug up those tweets and put them into a big, beautiful collage that's set for, you know, Pinterest type things, and they tried to get him fired, and luckily it worked, right? I mean, if he didn't get fired, we wouldn't have this movie.
Yeah.
And whenever those guys would come on, the ones that got James Gunn fired, I would do a little protest myself. I would play music from the soundtrack of Guardians of the Galaxy as like their intro music, because we always get to choose the bumper music whenever the guests come on. And I usually pick the one from that second Guardians trailer. It was Fox on the Run, whenever Rocket Raccoon's like blowing everything up.
Right.
There's a song by Sweet, beautiful song, and it's, you know, Fox on the Run. And then I guess it has, you know, a double meaning with Fox being Fox News. But, you know, I just didn't like the way that they hunted him down, but it worked out in the end, you know?
Yeah.
And then he gets hired back at Guardians 2, so, and I mean Guardians 3. So it kind of works out, and he apologized for that stuff even before it got brought up. Like, he had been apologizing years earlier. He knew that he was trying to be edgy. And
again, Disney obviously knew he'd said that stuff, and they hired him, which is kind of, it's a little hypocritical for them to then fire him. It's like, you kind of knew that was out there at the time, because like you said, probably three or four years prior to the first Guardians movie, he'd said, you know what, I did slut a lot of stuff, and I was trying to be edgy, blah, blah, blah. So Disney knew it. So the fact that they fired him, it's like, really? You kind of knew that's what he'd done. He's already apologized. Why are you letting him go? But I agree. Had they not, we wouldn't have gotten the Suicide Squad. And hopefully, it'd be nice to see him kind of straddle both fences, like still do DC movies and do some Marvel movies, because we really haven't seen anybody else do that. They're either DC movie directors or they're Marvel movie directors, mostly because Zack Snyder's kind of dominated the DC films previously. But
yeah, it may have been symbolic on Disney's part just to put it out there that he was fired, but obviously he was going to come back. I thought I read something that Kevin Feige was on set for Suicide Squad and, you know, kind of saw what was going on. And, you know, I think maybe he was going to get hired back all along. And it's incredible the amount of leeway that DC gave James Gunn. It seemed like a blank check, $100, $150 million to do whatever you want. And here's a TV show on top of that.
Yeah, we had a Peacemaker series still coming. So, but yeah, just that cast, too. The fact that he had Nathan Fillion, Peter Capaldi, Michael Rooker, a lot of these people James Gunn's worked with extensively. Like, if you show half of James Gunn's movies, Michael Rooker will appear in half of those movies. Like, Slither, obviously. He was in the Belko Experiment, which James Gunn wrote but didn't direct. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies as Yondu. But he's got a cadre of actors that he works with. But I really loved Ratcatcher. I'm going to mispronounce her last name, so I apologize. Danielle Melacour?
I know that you were at GameStop trying to buy her Funko Pop with little Sebastian on her shoulder.
Yeah, it was so cute.
And, so I knew you had a thing for her.
Yeah, they had that.
Or Sebastian.
King Shark. Well, I'm an animal lover anyway, so yes. Little Sebastian. The whole movie, I'm like, I swear if they kill Sebastian off, I'm going to. But yes, so I'm an animal lover, so it would have been a no-no had they killed Sebastian for me.
Yeah, I
would have
got him and left. I mean, obviously DC did their research on what James Gunn has done, because if you watch something like Slither and Super, put those two movies together, you kind of know what you're going to get with the Suicide Squad. Extremely violent and extremely funny. And right out the gate, I mean, people's heads are getting cut off. I mean, there's swords going through people's skulls, and then their skull slides off gradually onto the ground. The detachable kid is being tortured over here, and then you can see him reacting over there. And oh, my goodness. And it's just funny to think of what it was like on set, because, you know, like Sean Gunn, his brother, plays Weasel. And then Steve Agee, you know, who's one of the guys in the control room with Amanda, he was King Shark on set. And those are just some of his best friends. It must be a real safe place working with his family, basically, his friends, Michael Rooker and everyone else that he loves.
First time he's worked with Idris Elba, and as far as I know, the James Gunn's worked with him. And having seen Bloodsport now on the big screen, it's almost like that's the perfect role for him. I hope they do more with his character.
It was smart of James Gunn to not just give him Will Smith's role, because he wouldn't have to just follow in Will Smith's footsteps. And there's some sort of, you know, will they bring Will Smith back?
Right.
That's perfect. Leave it open.
Yeah, and a lot of these characters, like we pick up with Rick Flag, Harley, and Boomerang.
Oh, how they improve those characters, too.
Yeah. And the one complaint I heard about Suicide Squad, it wasn't my complaint, but I can kind of see the validity, was the whole political thing with Harley Quinn when she was kidnapped, and they kind of show her with the
I felt
governor.
A lull during that, yeah.
And some people felt like I could have just seen her be captured and then they rescue her. I didn't need all that extra. But when you've got someone like Margot Robbie, who, to me, she is to Harley Quinn what Ryan Reynolds is to Deadpool. It's
exactly, yes.
Very, very well cast, and that she kind of embodies that role on the big screen. So I can see giving her the extra screen time, too, but I can also see where it's like, it was kind of unnecessary, per se.
When I know I'm going to review a movie, I usually have my notes app out on my phone with the brightness turned all the way down, sitting in the back row, and, you know, the ringer turned off. And I got the Shazam app open, too, so I can hear what music is. And usually the titles of the songs help me know the plot, too. Mm. So I'm picking up information all the time. And that's something I wrote during that first watch, was that the political stuff kind of, it felt stylistically different, not as flashy. It was very, let's get some plot in there so we can get back to some crazy murder scenes again. But then when I watched it the second time at home with the subtitles on, I really appreciated all of the plot that was put into that. It all makes sense. It was well thought out. I don't know the comics, but I assume it took a lot from Ostrander's original thoughts on what this country is about and the freedom fighters and stuff. So I recommend, obviously, see it in the theater. And if it's available and you have HBO Max, watch it again immediately.
Yeah.
This movie is very rewatchable. I was watching it as I drove here. It was on my dashboard. I swerved and hit a few people.
Oh, no. Well, we apologize.
Violence, it got into me.
But no, that's one of the things I've always talked about, is one thing that'll make a movie rate higher for me when I'm reviewing it is this something I would like to see again?
Because some of these are HBO Max password is one of the giveaways.
If you go on, it is Batman Rules All 54128.
And if you retweet that, and James will, there you go, you get free HBO Max.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, but rewatchability is a big key. Like some movies, it's like you can watch it once and be like, okay. And other movies are like, I want to see that again. Ready or Not, Gunpowder Milkshake, Atomic Blonde. And if it's a movie that I go out and I actually buy the physical Blu-ray or DVD for, it's a very good movie, because that's a movie I want to own so I can watch it again whenever I feel the urge to. And even though a lot of these things are available on streaming services now, it never, ever hurts to actually have the physical media. So keep that in mind, kids. It's my tip of the day.
A lot of the reviews that I read for the 2016 version was just the movie would come to a screeching halt trying to explain who these characters are. It was like their stats on their Dungeons and Dragons sheet or something would come up, and like, his hit count is 16 and he can pull a sword out of any pocket or something. And this one, I feel like it was definitely what they say, show, don't tell. And you really got to know these characters, and it didn't slow the movie down. You know, Rick Flagg is way cooler in this movie than I know that for a fact he was in the first movie, because he was doing so much exposition in that first one. Just, you know, don't mess with Katana. She's got my back.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I would agree. I think that was brilliantly done, too, to set up. And again, I'm trying not to be spoilery. It's been out for a month.
Mm-hmm.
So are we being spoilery?
I think since I review all my movies on Letterboxd, and it said 190,000 people have already rated and reviewed it.
Okay.
And it's on HBO Max. Oh, real quick. Tomorrow, they're actually doing a watch-along.
That's right.
There's going to be the Suicide Squad watch-along with the cast and crew at 8 p.m. Central. And they're going to all watch it at the same time on HBO Max, and you can tweet along with them on Twitter. So definitely, if you haven't seen it yet, tomorrow would be a perfect day.
Yeah.
Today, whenever you hear this, August 30th, 8 p.m. Central, do the watch-along with James Gunn and just get some secrets from the guy who made the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like getting the director's cut and then having the listen to the commentary on Blu-ray, which it's in the special feature I've always enjoyed, is hearing the director or the actors kind of break down, oh, in this scene we did this, and that's always fun. So yeah, that'll be... Because James Gunn did that not too long ago with Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Mm-hmm.
He said, hey, everybody, on this time, start the Disney Plus app and watch the movie. We're going to do a watch-along for the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It was a lot of fun. Sean Gunn jumped on, and Michael Rosenbaum jumped on, mm-hmm. and we're kind of tweeting it. So it's a lot of fun to get their thoughts and perspectives and see their little jokes that they put out.
So, yes, I am granting you permission to be as spoilery as you want, as long as we're having fun. I don't want anyone's feelings to get hurt.
Okay.
And I'll put that in the title description, too, that this is a spoiler discussion. So no one will be, you know, ruined by what we say.
Since we're going to do that route, then I would say that having that time, like at the bar when they're kind of bonding as they're waiting for the contact and everything like that, getting more meat on Rick Flagg had much more of an impact when they finally end up when Peacemaker kills him.
Yes.
That's a much more impactful death than it would have been had they not had all this extra character buildup for him in this movie.
It was just one of the perfect scenes is when they go through and they have a kill-off as they go through the jungle. Peacemaker
<That's great. laughs>
and Idris Elba, John Cena, they're just trying to out-kill each other. And then they open up the tent flap and they see that, it was a peaceful army and Rick Flagg's just hanging out with the lead militia lady. And she's like, why didn't my people notify me? Like, we didn't see anybody. And when Sebastian is like waving at her, is that rat waving at me? Like, I think so. Why? He's friendly? It humanizes Rick Flagg so much. All of the perfect little lines that he has.
Yeah. Much more a three-dimensional character than we got in the first film. And again, you can blame it on... Okay, that's the first film, but I feel like this was never noted as a sequel
mm-hmm.
or a reboot either, because we have Harley, we have Captain Boomerang, we have Rick Flagg all talking about, hey, I haven't seen you for a while. So it's obviously in the same universe, but it wasn't really ever treated like Suicide Squad 2 or anything like that. So the fact that we got more Rick Flagg this time, I think is a credit to James Gunn. And again, that takes nothing away from David Ayer, because I know that the hashtag is trending, release the Ayer cut on Twitter. And I wouldn't mind seeing it. I wouldn't mind seeing what David Ayer's, because a lot of times that's been a criticism of Warner Brothers, is that there's too many suits meddling with the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind seeing what David Ayer originally had in mind. I don't know that it would vastly improve the movie. I think this was just, in my opinion... This was a better movie than the first Suicide Squad movie.
I just could not stop laughing every time that Weasel was on screen. I don't know if he's useful to the plot. No spoilers, like we said. Turns out he didn't die, and after the credits you find out, and he's still alive. But
post-credit scenes, that's right.
Weasel is the funniest character, and all he does is just go, and just the way he walks and his gait, and I'd cry laughing watching just Weasel. So if this movie was just a Weasel movie... It would have been perfect, but it's more in depth than that. There's so many things to take away that are just perfect about this film to me.
Yeah, no, I think overall I'm excited to see what comes of the Peacemaker series, because John Cena was incredibly hateable. He just played this just.
But you saw his side too. I feel like.
I guess.
Protecting peace at any cost, no matter how many women, men, and children I have to kill.
Right. Yeah. That's a side, sure. I'm not sure when I agree with, but it was overall, I think my favorite characters were Ratcatcher, we mentioned. Mm-hmm. King Shark, just because it was a lot of fun to kind of see him.
So funny. And knowing it, I didn't know it was Stallone until after the movie was over.
Oh, really?
I had no idea. So just watching it again, knowing it was Stallone, blew my mind every time. How funny it must have been to be in the studio with him.
Yeah, just saying, recording
can you,
those
can
lines.
Can you say Num Num again differently? A little dumber this time?
Num?
No, yeah. That's not Num Num.
That would have been funny to see. There's got to be an outtake again. Hopefully on the Blu-ray, they'll have video of him in studio. But David Desmalchin as Polka Dot Man was great because we actually had David on the show, I think, twice now to talk about his different stuff. But he's obviously kind of no stranger to this because he played Abracadabra in The Flash on the CW. Mm-hmm. He played the one of the Joker's henchmen in The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger as the Joker, obviously. And he's a comic book writer, too, the Count Crowley comics. So he is a nerd's nerd, a geek's geek. So it's fun to see him in this. And again, he was in the Belko experiment as well. So he's worked with Michael Rooker. He did have a scene with Rooker, but he's obviously worked with James Gunn before. So it's kind of fun to see him in this movie, too, because the Polka Dot Man is a C-list Batman villain from, I think, literally from his first appearance was Detective Comics issue 300. So back in the early 60s, if not late 50s.
There's that James mind going again. So, I like that.
It's Detective 300. It's hard to forget that issue.
Yeah.
But the Polka Dot Man, and it's this obscure character, and he did such a good job. I mean, David Desmalchin is not a Will Smith or a Ryan Reynolds. He always brand new character every time you see him. So he's very, very talented, and kudos to him for doing what he did with the role.
Yeah, well, if you know anything about him and you find out his backstory, David Desmalchin, he had some dark times previously in his life, and just to see him blossom from, you know, sidekick on Ant-Man, which is huge.
Yes, again,
to being
Ant-Man.
Like stealing the show on the Suicide Squad. Every scene with his mom is beautiful. It's the biggest use of CGI that I've ever loved. It's incredible that his mom takes on the role of Starro at the end, and it like gives him the power to kill this thing. And then he just yells, "I'm a mother effing superhero!" And then, bam,
yeah,
squish.
Yeah, that was kind of like, oh, I think I exclaimed out loud when he dies. I'm like, no! I thought he was going to make it all the way through to the end. It's kind of like watching Gene Hackman in the Poseidon Adventure. It's like, oh, they're all going to, oh my gosh, they just killed Gene Hackman.
He's always on the verge of crying. Like that whole argument about Milton and who Milton was. And
that was hysterical.
Why are you all obsessed with Milton now? I've liked him since I met him.
That was Milton. That's very James Gunn.
Such
too.
A dumb, pointless scene that adds everything to the movie, actually.
Just
knowing how Harley Quinn and Idris Elba and David Desmalchin all get together and the humor that comes through with James Gunn and the immediate violence and the shock, the left turns that he puts in. That scene right there is just the perfect example of what James Gunn can do.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, he's a local boy. I think he grew up in Baldwin, I think.
I feel like I want to say Kirkwood, especially when we were talking to Sean Gunn. I think we were talking about how they were trying. Oh, no, when we were talking about your friend BK, we were talking about how they were filming in Atlanta to recreate, I thought, downtown Kirkwood.
Downtown St. Charles.
Downtown St. Charles. Yeah, it kind of reminded me of that, you know, the brick streets with the old-timey shops and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Take a look at it. And, you know, Star-Lord's from St. Charles.
Right.
So they were definitely channeling home.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd love to try to get him on the air. I've reached out once or twice, but evidently he's doesn't like to do interviews. From what
have you threatened
his
to cancel him? Maybe if you did some sort of Twitter thing.
Hey, I found a tweet you did, buddy.
You
the
need
three
to come
dates
on
the ones. Yeah,
so 8 p.m. tonight or tomorrow, August 30th, whenever you hear it.
Right.
See if James gets an exclusive interview or yelled
we'll
at.
See. We'll see. No, I love his stuff. And like I said, Belko Experiment, if you haven't seen that one, that's another dark, very interesting, very original film that he wrote. Someone else directed it. But I would just love to pick his brain about the type of things he comes up with. I know he said that Belko Experiment was a dream he had, and he woke up and like, I got to write this down. And that's the premise of the Belko Experiment is these people are in this office building, and then they're suddenly forced to kill each other, or the people who are watching this whole thing and have them trapped in the building will execute 10 of them. Mm-hmm. So they either have to kill 5 people, or the people watching will kill 10. And it's just kind of man versus man. Mob mentality trapped in this hospital. It's very, and Sean Gunn's in it as well. Michael Rooker, David Desmalchin are all in it. John C. McGinley, great cast, but it's another one that's from that dark place. That's like, but it's got these elements of humor. So it's very James Gunn-esque.
We've been piling on the praise. I know that I felt like I liked the movie a little bit more than you. Hmm. What was some of the things that kind of bothered you? Was it not like the comics? Was the ending not satisfying? I think you had a problem with Starro, maybe. Tell me what you missed from the movie.
One of my initial things was I've James Gunn. Oh my gosh, he's paying tribute to Ostrander. I love that run of comic books. He did such a good job with Guardians. So I think part of it's my fault. I went with my expectations here. Mm-hmm. And I think when you do that with any movie, you're kind of like, oh, well, it wasn't like Mystery Men, for example. Great movie. I went in with my expectations. I had no idea what to expect, and I loved that movie. It was not something that most people enjoyed. It's one of those cult things, kind of like Office Space. So after the fact, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I love Mystery Men. But I think I went in with my expectations too high was my problem. That being said, the comic book nerd me is kind of nitpicky. It's like, okay, again, at least they had more. We're going into this government because they were trying to overthrow and find out what weapon they have. That was very Suicide Squad-esque in the comic book form. But the fact that Starro the Conqueror, like I mentioned earlier in the show, is a Justice League level. We need to call in Green Lantern, Superman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Firestorm, Red Tornado. We need the big guns to take out Starro. And Starro ends up getting done in by Ratcatcher and Harlequin. I'm like, okay, no, that's this team. Polka Dot Man had the best shot against Starro based on his powers. Mm-hmm. But so that just kind of irked me a little bit. I'm willing to overlook it because I think at the end of the day, this was James Gunn. It's a big, uber violent, I'm going to tell an absurd story. And you kind of, there were huge parts of absurdity throughout the movie. So I'm okay with it. But again, it wasn't, had they been a little bit not as heavy on the ending where it's like, okay, these people are now going to take out Starro the Conqueror. But I love Peter Capaldi. He's my favorite doctor. For those of you who don't know, Peter Capaldi played the 12th Doctor in the Doctor Who franchise, and he's my favorite modern era doctor. I felt he was a little underutilized, though.
Yeah, I mean, he adds a lot to the plot, but he doesn't have any of the cool lines, which you can feel. So he's kind of the central figure that gets everything involved with Starro.
Right.
But he's kind of just exposition guy saying how we found the star, the government's responsible for it. I've been with them for 30 years. And then he gets the coolest kill, maybe, of the whole the whole movie when Starro rips him apart because he's been tortured by this guy
right
for 30 years.
Yeah. No, I love Peter Capaldi. Just, like I said, it's a brilliant cast. Nathan Fillion, for the little bit he's in it as the detachable kid, it was great. I love the cast. I love the movie overall. It was, like I said, better than the first one. But just those little kind of the nitpicky part of me.
Yeah.
But again, looking at it as it's just this absurd, over-the-top comic book movie, I loved it.
It sounds like you were very attached to Starro, and you knew Starro's kind of powers and the possibilities. Yeah, that was one complaint I heard was, oh, just put your hand over your face, and then that will stop Starro from killing you with the tiny little starfishes that come out of its armpit.
Yeah.
I think I got caught up in the music. I mean, the score during that scene when Harley Quinn comes with her javelin, like, oh, that part of the plot's coming back now. And then how beautiful it was. The song that they played, it's called, like, Ratismo, and it almost sounds like a Pixies song. And so it really got me going. And then the beautiful imagery of her floating in that eyeball and the rats swimming past her. I think I did cry just because the music itself was so beautiful. So yeah. I was manipulated. You're the one who's right. I'm the one who's wrong.
See, that's the beauty about opinions on movies. There is no right. There is no wrong. That's why I always tell people, if people get so bent out of shape about Zack Snyder and the Man of Steel and everything like that, it's a perfect. It's not, but I don't care that you liked it. Same with Last Jedi. Max on movies. Love Last Jedi. I did not like it. It's probably one of my least favorite Star Wars movies, but that's okay. It's okay to have different opinions about movies. That doesn't matter. It doesn't make you a bad person or the person who has a different opinion than you a bad person. We should need to just learn. Again, it goes back to that whole grace and forgiving, getting along with people no matter what. But it's at the end of the day, it's just an escapism, and I don't mind the fact that that was – but I did like my friend Gary actually pointed out, he said, the scene when Harley Quinn is going through the compound with machine guns, just taking out the guards. He said, oh, that's very much like the scene in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 when Michael Rooker and Yondu and Rocket Raccoon are going through the ship, just annihilating Yondu's crew. Like, oh, yeah, it's a very very similar because you got the music playing and they're just massacring everyone on board. And that similarity, again, that must be a James Gunn thing because it was right about the same point in the movie.
She picks up the javelin again, too. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, I think James Gunn, when you go to a James Gunn movie, you get a James Gunn movie. And I think that's a good thing because I've not been let down by him yet.
I think that when you break it down like that, it is another comic book movie where you get maybe one villain that just dies and then you're on to the next villain, the way all the Batman movies used to be, yeah. Where you just get, this is the Mr. Freeze movie. He's gone now. So I think, yes, Starro was maybe a one-off character, but now we have more to look forward to, and that's the big thing to take from it.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think you need to watch this one immediately on HBO Max. I know you're a busy guy, or go back to the theater. I feel like I did get some help from the subtitles. Did you know I've been singing this Pixie song wrong my whole life? When I was watching
the word you were singing, what was it?
I thought it was What's Your Name? What's Your Name? So I've been a Pixies fan for, I don't know, like 20 years or something since I got the Best Of CD when I was a kid. And I realized I was singing this song wrong my whole life. So thank you, subtitles. You've
don't
made
feel
me
bad.
A better man, yes.
It's one of the best things on the internet is misheard subtitle or misheard song lyrics.
We were doing that with Rick Burchett right before he left after the show, like how no one tells you how to pronounce things in comic books when you're growing up. You were yelled at, I think, by DeMatteis or someone else who knew DeMatteis and told you how to say it. And then you asked him directly and your whole brain exploded.
Yeah, he's like, no, that's you're saying it the correct way. I'm like, yes.
I talked to the freaking
guy. Yeah, it's horrible. But so your overall thoughts on The Suicide Squad, it sounds like you would recommend it as well.
Yeah, I gave it 4 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd, my favorite place to share, you know, little jokes. I usually don't do full reviews, but, you know, I do little jokes. Let me do one for you here real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
It occurred to me that everyone in prison was wearing the regular jumpsuit, like orange shoes, orange jumpsuit, but King Shark wasn't. I don't understand why he had a beef with those Crocs. I don't know if Killer Croc was, like, bothering him that day or something. It's a terrible joke.
No, it's good. Killer Croc. Yeah,
he was in 2016,
That's right?
Killer Croc. Yeah, I brought it back. Thank
See?
You.
See? Perfect. I love it. We've come full circle. And if people want to, like, the Letterboxd thing, is that, like, something people can follow you on Letterboxd, right?
Yeah, Joey_VEE. If you want to follow me, you know, I've rated every single movie I've ever seen, which is ridiculous, I guess. So it's like 4,000 movies that I've given a rating to. And it's just fun to collect all your different critics that you love and put them in one place. And then as movies come out and the critics rate them, you kind of see what's good and what's bad, and you can read their full reviews. And it's something I've been trying to get you on because I feel a connection to people when I see what movie they're watching, and I can think of you watching it that night. Like if your review pops up at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, like, oh, he watched Gunpowder Milkshake tonight. That's kind of cool because I was thinking about watching that today. And it just kind of keeps me closer to my friends, and I've always wanted to talk movies every single day without – you know, bothering people on Facebook or anything. This is the place for it. Check out Letterboxd. I have no affiliation. I don't get paid, but
yeah,
I love it.
I should probably get on there. That's one more thing I should probably, because I need to, I love seeing movies and I love talking about them. It's the sitting down and writing my thoughts out because I always second guess. I'm like, no, that sounds stupid. I shouldn't say that. And I just get inside my own head too much when I write. So that's why.
Yeah, you know what? I help with the website a lot. I could just copy and paste your reviews into your Letterboxd account that you create and they would just be there and I could get you in trouble with people, and the wife would be mad, and she'll leave you, and then we can hang out more.
And I got to say, too, for those of you who are watching this, Joey V, without him, this show would not be going on as long as it has. We just did our 250th episode not that long ago, and I know you've heard me mention him before and thanking him, but literally, this is the guy, so you're seeing him all now, who does all the heavy lifting on the show. I just talk and press buttons to turn the on and off air sign on, but he's the one who does all the website stuff and post stuff and make sure I'm on, hey, did you send me that link yet? And I need to get him stuff. So thank you for everything you do because it wouldn't be the same without you.
You know, it's the only thing I look forward to all week. I sit in my dark room working on your website, and then Sunday they let me out, and I come to KTRS and do the live stream and put your beautiful face on video, and everyone can see that you exist.
Part of the work release program that you're in, I
know.
I appreciate.
I've always got the pickup recycling on the way here on
right.
the side of the highway, and then I come and do your show. That's part of KTRS. It's kind of like Australia, just
full
a
service.
Prisoner colony.
Right. You can't say penal colony on the air.
Of course not.
We're not on the air. Penal colony. There you go. We can say it as much as we want. But no, this whole thing doing this tonight was your idea, the Suicide Squad extravaganza review, dissecting it all down. So that was all your idea. So thanks for the idea. And hopefully those of you watching enjoyed this little bonus episode of Geek to Me Radio. And if you did, leave a comment below. Let me know. Hopefully you're following on YouTube and also Twitter and Instagram at Geek to Me Radio. If you liked this, then leave us a comment. Let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about next. Joey is very knowledgeable about movies, so maybe we'll something else come up and we can do another one of these.
Yeah, we'll do, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, the Shang-Chi movie? Is that coming up next?
So close. Oh, Shang-Chi.
Hopefully they teach me during the movie how to say it.
They will, actually. Yeah, they have a whole scene with Awkwafina on the plane. It's great. But yeah, that's a great movie, so maybe when that comes out, we can get into that. And we had Gene Luen Yang, who wrote the Marvel series and is writing the current Marvel Shang-Chi series. Maybe we'll get him to join us via Skype as well.
Just a great guy, and I'm glad we had it. He's helped so many people discover their love of comics, and I love what he's done, especially that Superman Fights the Klan.
Yeah, that was a great series,
This guy's a great guy. Look him up, Gene Luen Yang.
Yeah. So thanks to Joey V. Thank you to all those who are watching and who watched this. Watching or watched. It's not streaming live, so watched after the fact. Thank you, and check out that Suicide Squad live tweet with James Gunn and cast. August 30th, 8 p.m. Central.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Hopefully you liked everything. If you liked it, tell your friends. If you didn't like it, tell your enemies. Until next time, thanks so much, everyone.
Hey, kids. Are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome